Hey, this is Ari. Welcome back to the Energy Blueprint Podcast. With me today is Dr. Wendy Trubo, who is a gynecologist by training and went on to be a certified functional medicine practitioner who now specializes in toxins. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. She is absolutely brilliant at what she does in this field of toxins and detoxification. And this is a really fun, wide-ranging conversation where in some cases I play devil's advocate and ask some challenging questions. And I think it broaches a lot of very interesting territory in this realm of toxins and detoxification. And I think you're going to get a lot out of this discussion, particularly because she has some fairly novel takes and creative takes on different things that are toxic and that are affecting our body in a toxic way that you may not be used to hearing in this sort of context. She is also the co-author of Dirty Girl, which is probably the best title of a book I've ever heard. Ditch the Toxins, Look Great, and Feel Freaking Amazing. And she's been regularly featured in Mind Body Green and the Huffington Post. So enjoy this conversation. I think you're going to get a lot of value from it. So welcome, my friend, to the show. Such a pleasure to finally have you on.
Great to be here, Ari. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. You are my first podcast recording of the new year.
Ooh, no pressure.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay. Stay tuned, folks.
So let me ask you this. You are a gynecologist by training. You went into functional medicine later on. You became a certified functional medicine practitioner. And now a big focus of your work is toxins and detoxification. So how does a gynecologist get into specializing in toxins?
It's a very deep conversation. Okay. Well, it's always personal, right? My mess became my message. So originally when I went into functional medicine, it was because my husband's mentor in functional medicine diagnosed me with celiac. And it altered my life because I had no idea that I was such a mess until my irritable bowel and room clearing gas and all the issues head to toe, wasting, nutritional deficiencies, hair loss, and endocrine, you know, head to toe, I was a mess. And it all basically resolved when I dealt with the celiac and the resulting food sensitivities, candida. And I kind of trucked along, but I was super inspired to go into functional medicine because of that. So I went into functional medicine and then fast forward like 13, 14 years and I hit another major, I don't know, is it a bump? I wouldn't call it a bump. I would call it like a crevice that I fell into and had to climb out of when we went to France. I was 48. We went to France, trip of a lifetime. And I came home from France and my hair started falling out. I gained 9 pounds and I had a rash all over my face and I was like ready to rip my face off. And you know, it's really hard to treat yourself, right? Like it's kind of hard to see the forest for the trees. So I already knew that I had mycotoxins. So I started to treat those. I had four strains. So cool. Started treating those and we'll come back to that. And then I tested my thyroid. Cause like, right. Everyone thinks their thyroid is off. My thyroid was perfect. And then being 48, I thought must be my hormones, right? Hormones were perfect. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe it's my gut because I'm a celiac and I always have bad gut. Nope, my gut was great. So now I'm really stumped and I'm just like, what's going on here? And I hear this report that when Notre Dame burned, it released 500 tons of lead into the air as dust. And the closer you were to Notre Dame when it burned, the more lead exposure you got. And the farther away you were, the less you got. That makes sense, right? And we were there. We were there right after it burned. We didn't go to Notre Dame because it had burned, but we slogged through that dust for a week. And after I came home was when I got sick.
Wow.
And so how I got into toxins was because I immediately tested my metals and they had been mildly positive. Now they were super high. And I was like, ouch, I definitely got an exposure. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like in for a penny, in for a pound. So I tested the environmental toxicants like gasoline fumes and nail polish, chemicals and plastics and phthalates and flame retardants and you name it. And I had a boatload of them. Mm-hmm. And I looked at my husband and I said, I'm such a dirty girl. And that was really my entry into toxins because it was so personal. because I really don't know very many people who are like, cool, let's gain 9 pounds and have half their hair fall out, right? Nobody's like, sign me up.
Well, it's great that you didn't lose your humor in the midst of lead poisoning.
Right? Right. Well, I'm like far away from it, so now I can laugh about it. But at the time, I was like, God, what's going on here, folks?
Did your husband get excited when you first told him that? Or did he know you were referring to lead poisoning?
He knew. Because I said to him, look at this. I'm such a dirty girl. And he went, okay, yes, okay. And then I said to him, and that's going to be the title of our book. And he went, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, and it's an amazing title. It's an amazing
right?
title. Yeah.
And our next book, Sweaty and Bitchy, is another amazing title.
Are you? Oh, so you're officially letting the public know about
Yes, Sweaty title. And Bitchy is coming out third quarter of 2023.
Hopefully you've trademarked it at this point so nobody else can steal it from you.
It's very specific. It's trademarked for the book and for the supplements, but you can't trademark it for like, I'm so sweaty and bitchy. I wouldn't be able to sue you if you said that, you know?
Now, are these sweaty and bitchy supplements that you speak of, are they designed to make you sweaty and bitchy or to remove your sweaty and bitchiness?
Yes. Have half my hair fall out and gain 9 pounds, said no woman ever. So no, they're designed to remove the sweaty and bitchy from your experience.
Shouldn't they be called like sweaty and bitchy or something to that effect?
We'll call it like calm and chill. And the ice pack, we'll call it like silly things that'll just go right in the vibe. But yeah, it'll be totally designed to chill you out, quiet you down, balance your endocrine system, balance your hormones, help you sleep.
Got it. Well, I hope that I'll be included in the brainstorming process for the branding and naming of all of the different products in this product line, because I think that would be a lot of fun.
I'll hit you up. We'll do it offline though. And then book three, which we talked about offline, which we're not going to share about yet. Well, I'll hit you up for that.
All right.
Stay tuned.
So, okay. Back to toxins. Now, in the world of health, like I feel this is something I feel personally is going on for me, and I think a lot of people resonate with this. The demands on us are unprecedented. You know, if we contrast modern ways of life with hunter-gatherer ways of life, their way of life involves, you know, maybe a few hours a day of sort of doing something, whether it's hunting or gathering or fetching water or whatever, tending to the children. But for the most part, it's a very relaxed existence. There's a lot of lounging around, a lot of siesta time, so to speak, a lot of napping, a lot of just sitting around. And in the modern world, we're go, go, go. We've got a million things to do. We've got a million modern problems that are affecting our health. We've got, you know, circadian rhythm issues. We've got nutrition issues. People want to lose fat. They want to gain muscle. They want to fix their insulin sensitivity, their blood sugar levels. They want to fix their brain function. They want to, you know, a million things, right? Why should, amidst this landscape of so many things that could attract our attention, why should we focus on toxins? Can you make the case for it?
I totally can make the case for it. And in a nutshell, all those problems, with the exception of creating scenarios that make our body think that we're running from a lion repetitively, all those other problems track back to toxins. You probably need some data to support that. Fine. Okay. So when you look at all of the medical issues that humans in a modern world are suffering from, obesity, diabetes, cancer, insomnia, endocrine dysfunction, gut dysfunction, when you go, I'm a very good 10,000 foot person. When you go to 10,000 feet, what you're looking at as humans is a state of inflammation. And your particular soup, I think of humans as a blended soup. There's your genetics, your lifestyle, your early childhood, your antibiotic use, your diet now, how much are you sleeping? Are you a stress ball? Do you meditate? All that is you. What do you do for a job? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you have good relationships with yourself and others? What's your self-talk? Are you moving your body? Put that all into a bucket and blend it together. So you can't really say, okay, what's happening now is because of this particular ingredient, because it's all tied together. So each human's going to manifest their own inflammation in their own way. So for one human like me, I show up with autoimmune disease. Other people are going to show up with insulin resistance or diabetes or resistance to weight loss. particularly when we look at weight loss and diabetes or weight gain and diabetes, toxins, if you over exceed your body's ability to get rid of them, they get stored. Where do they get stored? Your bones, your organs, your fat, your brain. So the body is so much smarter than us. We are not going to lose a pound until we get the toxins out of the fat. So when you start to talk about modern issues, to me, these are toxin overloads that show up as inflammation. And then we call it something: diabetes, insulin resistance, obesity, endocrine dysfunction, whatever you want to call it, to me is just inflammation from toxins.
There are some interesting studies on different man-made toxins in relationship to body composition. There's a number of toxins that have been classified as obesogens, endocrine mimicking compounds, hormone disrupting compounds that are obesogenic that contribute to fat gain. But there was a few studies, I think at least two, where they measured levels of POPs, persistent organic pollutants, in a person's bloodstream during caloric restriction, during weight loss. Okay, so among this group of people, overweight people who were losing weight, some, of course, had higher levels of persistent organic pollutants in their bloodstream, some had lower levels. What they found was that the propensity towards weight regain was directly correlated with the blood levels of persistent organic pollutants. So another way of saying this is that these man-made compounds are being stored in the fat cells. The body sequesters them away in the fat cells to get them out of the bloodstream, where they're going to be less toxic to internal organs, the brain, etc. And they stay locked up there. But then when you lose fat, the contents of those fat cells get dumped back into the bloodstream. Blood levels of these persistent organic pollutants rise. And what they found is that the tendency to regain the weight that was lost was directly linked with the elevation in persistent organic pollutants. So in other words, these chemicals were essentially pulling the fat back on as some sort of protective mechanism. Can you speak to that dynamic, or do you have any other sort of angles on that whole thing?
Well, I mean, when you say angles, the thing that I think about, this is such a rich conversation because there's so many facets to it. So first you start with how much are you being exposed to? And that's controllable in some senses, especially if you choose to drink from plastic water bottles, you're controlling the amount of intake you get. Or if you heat up your food in plastic in a microwave, you have control over these things, which I love because you could actually alter your future by changing the inputs. So how much input are people getting? And then what's the state of the liver? How much alcohol do you drink? How are your hormones? Are you taking hormones from outside your body that are not bioidentical, meaning they don't look like what your body has, or are they bioidentical, which makes them a little bit easier to process? How's your gut? When these compounds get to your gut bound, are they proceeding out, or are you constipated and you're recycling them, doubling the burden on the liver and making it more likely you're going to essentially overflow? Think of your fat like a storage depot. So yes, to broaden and enrichen this, everything that you're exposed to ends up in your fat if you can't walk it through its excretion process. Mm-hmm. And especially rapid weight loss can be particularly dangerous for people if they dump out all these toxins. That's why you start to feel cruddy during weight loss, because you start to detox.
Mm-hmm. And the way that you're speaking about it implies that essentially all types of toxins can be excreted efficiently from the body. I'm under the impression that there are some types of toxins that that's not true, that really once they get into the body, it's very difficult for the body to get rid of them. There's, I'm spacing on the exact name of this. It's not perfluorocarbons, but it's something along those lines. That was recently, there was some kind of recent, I don't want to say scandal, but there was a discovery that a number of water brands like Perrier and I think Top Chico and one of the canned, I'm spacing on these flavored waters, but La Croix, I think, is the one. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'm getting all those brands right and not speaking badly about anyone.
Get slapped with
it. But there was high levels for sure in Topo Chico of this particular type of chemical, something along the lines of perfluorocarbons. And they were talking about them as quote unquote forever chemicals because they are not efficiently excreted from the body.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. So let's back up 200 years when you lived in a rural area, most likely, and you had that work-life balance that most of us strive for today, and you had clear rest and you had days of rest and you weren't exposed to incessant bombardment of technology, cell phones, blue lights, computers, all of it. And by the way, we hadn't yet entered the Industrial Revolution. And so the number of chemicals in your daily environment were quite low. There were no pesticides sprayed on your food. There were no cars. There were no highways. So you might have a lot of horse poop in your environment, but that's like what that and alcohol were the biggest ones. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to when pesticides, particularly glyphosate, starts to be used in 1971. By now, glyphosate, which is an herbicide, and by the way, is pretty easily excreted if you stop getting exposed to it. Mm. But it's contaminated just about every food chain. All of the organic legumes are all pretty much universally contaminated. If you're not drinking organic wine or juices, or if you're eating high fructose corn syrup, these are all contaminated at every level and more concentrated. So when you look at the differences in our lives, the level to which we're being exposed and the breadth of exposure, something that I don't think that it's easy to excrete per se, but when you pile on that, not only are they difficult to excrete, but you're also adding just a tremendous breadth of toxins and pesticides that your body has to deal with, it gets that much harder. Mm-hmm. Think about lead. The lead is stored in your bones. It likes the bones. So it's a heavy metal. It's very difficult to mobilize a heavy metal. You need to work very hard at a number of different levels to bind it again, excrete it. So you need to make sure that you're pulling it from the bones, that it's not being pulled in a way that's going to make you toxic, that the liver is able to deal with it, that the gut is able to deal with it, that your kidneys are intact, you can urinate it out. There's a lot of places this goes wrong. So I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's possible. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Got it. By the way, I'll just quickly mention, I looked up the name of the substance because it was driving me crazy that I couldn't remember it. It's polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a chemical class that includes 5,000 different substances that they say have been linked to learning delays in children and cancer. And I will give Topo Chico credit. They apparently have cut their score in half in recent years after it was discovered that they had the highest levels, but I think their levels are still considered high.
Yeah, is cut in half good or is cut in half better, right? I'm asking for a friend.
Good question. Good question. It seems to that point, I mean, we go to a restaurant, we drink bottled, you know, mineral water.
Yep.
And certainly, even for me, I make the assumption I'm drinking something pure. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my friend, maybe a mutual friend of ours, I don't know if you know, Marisa Snyder, mm-hmm. I was hanging out with her in San Diego a few months ago, her and her husband, and we were at a party and I went to go drink a can of La Croix, like flavored water, just something I never do. Right. You know, it was the only beverage available there that looked decent to me that didn't have a bunch of sugar in it or something like that, or alcohol. So I thought maybe I'll drink this. And she goes, oh, you know, that has forever chemicals in it. And I went, what? You know, yeah, PFAS, you know, mm-hmm. And then she also didn't remember what this thing is, polyfluoroalkyl substances. But, you know, again, these things are just lurking everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we're being exposed to them, you know, in the air, in the water, in the food. it's hard to, even in our homes, you know, off-gassing from our furniture and our carpet and flame retardants on our mattresses. And, you know, it's like, it seems almost impossible to avoid all of this stuff.
Well, let's talk about perfection culture first.
Okay.
There's diet culture. We're not going to talk about that. But I think there's a huge culture of needing to be perfect. And I look, I'm female, so I absolutely have like, I need to be amazing and I need to be on my game. But this is a place where perfection culture is going to nail us, because it's not, we're not talking about eradication and we're not talking about full on zero exposure. What we're talking about is mitigating the balance and tipping the scales towards excretion and detox, as opposed to never getting exposed. If you live on this earth, you're getting exposed. Now, the question is not, what if I get exposed? That is just a question designed to create tremendous anxiety and upset, right? What if questions are never empowering? The question to ask is, how can I minimize my exposure? How can I improve my air and my water quality, which one in six deaths in 1989 was associated with air or water quality. So these are, think about it, you breathe all day long. So how can you improve the air that you're breathing? What are the choices you can make? What is in your agency and what's outside it? If you have the funds and you're choosing a home, choose a home that's not near a highway or a farm or a golf course. I have a family member who bought a home on a golf course and I was like, great. The reason that's a problem is that nature hates a monoculture. And in order to get that golf course looking so beautiful, you got to spray the living daylights out of it with glyphosate. And glyphosate's implicated. It's actually patented as an antibiotic. So it's messing up your microbiome. It's messing up the whole ecosystem for the birds and the bees. It's toxic directly to bees. It's toxic to us. It's implicated in different forms of cancer. So we really want not to be exposed to these things. But again, pick what your agency is. Pick where you can control it. What broke my heart. Okay, Ari, I'm going to let you into a secret. I used to have the most beautiful, beautifully done nails. I know this is something you think about. And when I got my toxin screen, I was really high for the chemicals in nail polish, even though I was using a cleaner form of nail polish. It used to be this running joke. I would do my nails every Sunday. I'd go to sleep lying like this. And then every week it was like a new thing. And I stopped doing my nails because it wasn't worth it, right? I had agency over that. Broke my heart, but I had agency over it because it wasn't worth dealing with the toxins over. So you want to start to look at, how do you have control? If you're painting, use no VOC paint. If you're staining, use no VOC stains, because these are things you live with, right?
I went to a pottery class with my wife and kids a couple days ago, and the guy that is our teacher, mainly my wife's teacher, my wife is actually a very, very good with pottery, and I've just done a couple classes. But this guy who was our teacher is trained in a lot of the ancient styles of pottery. He learned from somebody who's sort of part of a lineage that these traditional techniques have been passed down for many generations. And as I was finishing this cup that I had made, I asked him, we were supposed to, what's it called? Glaze them, dip them in these glazes. And I asked him if there's a way to do it without the glaze. Because what I know is, you know, with, for example, plastics is, you know, plastics had all this BPA in them for many, many years. And then it came out that BPA was toxic, endocrine mimicking and obesogenic and neurotoxic and all these different things. And then the whole plastics industry sort of caught wind of the fact that the public was aware of the dangers of BPA and started making BPA-free plastics. And then it came out that instead of using BPA, they were using another chemical called BPS, which is likely as toxic or more toxic than BPA. So with these glazes and ceramics, it was found out many years ago that they had lead in them. And then as that became known that that was toxic, they started making lead-free glazes. But I thought to myself, I wonder if there's something similar going on here. Maybe there's other stuff in these glazes that I also don't want. So I'll just ask, is there a way to do pottery without glazes? Because what did the ancient people do before they had glazes? And actually he said, yes, absolutely. There was a couple methods he described. One involves using a very fine finishing clay that you put on top where the particles are much smaller, so it creates sort of a seal. And the other one is using a tool like a very smooth tool like a crystal or something like that, or a piece of glass, to rub with friction the outside of it. And you basically create it, you change, just by rubbing it, you change the whole surface of it. So it's much less porous and much more sealed. And so I spent like probably almost an hour just rubbing the inner and outer surfaces of this cup to do that. But I'm gonna have a cup that doesn't have any glaze on it as a result. And anyway, it's interesting to think about all of these dynamics of how industry does this sort of thing, right? It's like replacing one chemical with another that is as toxic or even more toxic. And it's almost impossible to escape them. You really have to like spend time studying this area to realize, okay, it turns out I actually have to skip all plastic water bottles and use glass, or use maybe stainless steel. And then stainless steel, depending on the liquid that I have in there and the temperature of the liquid, that could also maybe leach some bit of nickel and stuff like that, that I also don't want in my body. So maybe I don't want acidic liquids, I don't want hot liquids in there, because that could cause problems. Okay, I'm just gonna do glass. But then I have to lug a glass water bottle around, which is heavy and which can break, right?
And by the way, you want to test your stainless steel water bottle. If it's come from a third world country, you also want to test to make sure that there's no lead. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. Basically, you change to stainless steel and it's got lead in it and you're right back where you started. So,
right.
Yeah, I think what I would say is, again, it's not a question of, am I getting exposed? It's a question of, where am I going to put my energy and what battles will we pick, right? So, So pick big battles. As a human, my vote is, don't drink your sugar because it stresses the body, and don't drink alcohol because it stresses the body. And I know that most people at that point are like, okay, that was a good podcast, we're out of here, I'm not listening anymore. But really, if your body's dealing with alcohol, you're not dealing with the toxins.
Because
alcohol is a toxin, and it's an acute toxin, meaning if you don't deal with it and you have enough of it, it'll kill you. So you want to, your body is doing its thing. Your liver's detoxing. Your adrenals aren't completely stressed. Your gut's functioning, and boom, you drink three drinks on a Saturday night. And then your body's like, oh, sparkly item, I'm going to deal with that. Forget, and essentially stops all other detox behavior. So you're not dealing with your hormone imbalances. You're not dealing with the nail polish you just got exposed to, the blowout, the chemicals they used in the hair products. You're not dealing with any of that because you have an acute issue and you don't want to die. Your body wants to live. So you're going to stop the presses and focus exclusively on dealing with and processing the alcohol. But just as humans only have so much bandwidth in their brain or their attention, your liver has only so much bandwidth, and alcohol will take pole position. So you really want to focus on, what are the high value behaviors? Don't fill the pump as much as possible, recognizing if you live on the earth, you're going to get exposed in numerous ways. And then how do you optimize the excretion of chemicals? And those are two really big categories, right? So don't fill the pump is the food, the air, the water, the makeup, the clothing, the dry cleaning, the products. Anytime you're purchasing something, how do you level up? How do you even think to level up, right? So basically assume everything's dirty, and when you run out of it, try to level up. What do I mean by that, right? Like, assume it's all, my whole life I used, do I want to say the name? I used a product my whole life. And my mom told me it was green and clean. And then in my late 40s, I was like, this is so not clean. But literally, like, question everything. I grew up thinking this product was clean. It was green and it smelled nice. So I was like, it must be clean. Mm-mm. Super bad. So assume everything is dirty.
Okay. A lot of different directions I want to go.
I know, right?
So on the notion that, let's go here first, just to, it's a natural segue with what you just said. And I will maybe play devil's advocate slightly on that, and give you the opportunity to rebut it. So if we focus on that too much and we assume everything's dirty, do we run the risk of stressing ourselves out and creating nocebo effects from too much obsession, neuroticism, worry, anxiety around toxins that we're being exposed to? How do we balance an awareness of our exposure to toxins and supporting our detoxification systems with and working to minimize our exposures with not creating excessive stress, anxiety, mm-hmm. neuroticism, nocebo effects around that?
Which is counterproductive anyways, right? If you're super anxious, you've just shut down detox because your body's like, oh, a lion's going to eat me. Who mm-hmm. does detox when a lion's going to eat them? No, you focus on taking the sugar out of your liver. And
I do. I'm a very good multitasker.
You are. But like, but you're in your own category, Ari, right? Like there's the Ari category and we're aspiring to that. But like, dude, this like nobody's in the category you are. So the mere mortals like me mm-hmm. and the listeners maybe. So you don't want to be a stress ball, right? Because that's totally counterproductive. So I don't say assume everything is dirty to stress you out. I say everything is dirty to give you the opportunity to be wake up and be present and go, oh, I never asked the question. I never challenged this. I never challenged my own assumptions before. But that green product was not clean, right? So it's an opportunity, not a stress point. You don't have to take the opportunity if you don't want it, but you have the agency and control to be able to say, okay, my house cleaning products are running low. What are some opportunities? First off, what am I using? Environmental Working Group rates everything pretty much. If you're using a mainstream brand, you can check it. This is why I think it's so valuable to question everything and assume it's dirty, because you can actually check. I was so psyched when I started this process and I actually had picked a bronzer that was clean. I was like, okay. So once in a while, you'll hit the nail on the head and you'll be so proud of yourself. And then the majority of the time, you'd be like, oh boy, there's such an opportunity there, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an opportunity to take control. And I really believe in my heart, if we vote with our feet and our pocketbooks, eventually, when you have enough people moving in the same direction, companies will notice. Because if there's a demand for something, companies want to fill that demand.
Yeah.
So no, it's not to stress you out. It's to give you power.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So shifting directions, what are some of the biggest toxins? I know you mentioned alcohol and sugar, which are, you know, like not typically the toxins that people are talking about, but point taken that they are important to consider in this context. But apart from those two, what are some of the biggest toxins that you think are causing, let's say, a majority of the toxic load problems that are affecting most people?
Yeah, that's a huge question, Ari. So to be fair, it's not like you draw a line and say, this is diabetes and this is cancer, although there are some implications with certain chemicals and the clinical result that happens. But let's take a step back. One major category is the way we think. So you have something like what, 60,000 thoughts in a day? And in a day, if you have 250 or 1,000 of those, or even 10,000 that are in some way disempowering or minimize you or stress you, you set your body off on a chain that ends up in shutting detox down. So simply by managing your thoughts and asking different questions, you can start to improve your health. This is free, right? And here's the trick. So never ask what if questions. What if questions are in the devil bucket, because they send you down the victim, disempowered, can't fix anything, right? My friend said to me, she has four kids. Two are twins. I guess they'd have to be. Two are twins and they're on the autistic spectrum. And they're over 20 now. And she was going away for the first time without them. She said to me, hey, Wend, what if my boys burn the house down? And I was like, oh goodness, that is the wrong question. So ask a better question and you'll get a better outcome. So I said to her, instead of asking, what if they burn the house down? Why don't you ask yourself, what do I need to do to prepare my kids so that they're safe while I'm away? Very different question, because that allows your brain to chew on it and puts you in the driver's seat, right? Instead of what if, you're now a victim of the circumstances you can't control. So ask better questions and you will start to send your body in a better direction. Mm-hmm. I got more. Do you want to say anything about that though?
No. Tell me more.
Okay.
More toxins.
So that's just the toxic thoughts that we have. Thoughts like, you're so stupid. I'm so stupid. I never get it right. I'm a failure. I'm never going to succeed. Those type of fatalistic thoughts also shut down normal function because it sends your body into fight, flight, or freeze. So you want to start to notice the thoughts you have because they're not real, but we give them power like they're real. So train your brain. Okay. Those thoughts don't, they're not true. So have different thoughts, because you could just easily say, well, that's just not true. No, thank you. I'll take the other one. Right. You want something empowering or disempowering? Choose the empowering. Okay. Let's set thoughts to the side. Then we get into the practicalities. There's the things you put in your body. So your food, your water, your alcohol, your juice, your wine, anything that you're eating or drinking. You want to make sure that you level up wherever possible. Eat food that looks like itself. Eat food that's organic. Eat food that's local. I live in Massachusetts. Organic and local don't often go in the same sentence, right? Because it's cold up here most of the time. So I would choose organic over local, recognizing that it may not be picked at the peak of freshness, and recognizing that the transport has additional issues with environment. I would still pick an organic over local. So what are you putting in you? If you're drinking juices, know that if it's not organic, you're getting a hefty dose of glyphosate because it's been concentrated. Same goes for wine, which is like the industry dirty secret. So go for organic wine so you're not drinking glyphosate or pesticides. Okay. Then there's, what are you putting on your body? As a female, by the time I've left the house, I've put over 200 chemicals on my body in various forms, from the shampoo to the conditioner, to the face products, to the makeup, to the moisturizers, to the perfumes, you name it. And we're getting bombarded with chemicals. So again, another opportunity, as you run out of something, look to see if what you own is clean. And if it's not, level up using the environmental working group. 3, what's around you? This is like the hardest category because sometimes we don't have control over it. This is your air quality. Do you live near an industrial plant, a farm, a golf course, a highway? If you do, you're going to want to be extra careful about improving the air quality in your home with HEPA filtration and cleaning your air ducts and having the air quality tested in your home. Test the water in your home. That kind of goes to the in you and around you, because it's coming from a well or a municipal system. So it's outside your control, but you have control once it comes in your house. So control the quality of your water. Check on your furniture. A lot of companies will comply with the California Prop 65 of letting you know that there were chemicals or that it complies and there's no chemicals. So you can shop sustainably. It will be more expensive. But what you want to think about is, what's the cost of preventing a disease versus the cost of responding to a disease, right? If you could make the choice to avoid cancer by spending $10 extra a day, you probably would, because if you got cancer, you'd be spending $100,000 in a year. So it's a lot more expensive to react than it is to prevent, but we don't always think of it that way. Mm-hmm. So looking at what furniture you're buying, if you're going to buy a bed. So interesting, Ari. I have a patient who had really high levels of flame retardants. And I'm like, did you just buy a new bed? She said, yes. I said, oh, is it organic? She said, no. I was like, oh, cringe. Because, you know, beds are expensive. So if you're in the market for a new bed, get one without flame retardants, because these are endocrine disrupting. And what I mean by endocrine disrupting is it messes up your thyroid. If you're female, it messes up your female hormones, your periods, raises your risk of estrogen dependent cancers. These are things you want to avoid, just for the record. These are not like, oh yay, sign me up. It's like, no, thank you. Because remember, everyone thinks it's their thyroid when they gain weight, but it could also be endocrine disrupting chemicals. Mm-hmm. So you can start to tie the bow on, oh, I can see how my system's out of whack here. So the category that's around you is sometimes feels like it's out of our control, but these are the things that off-gas the construction materials we use, the furniture we're sleeping on or sitting on, what we're using to paint our walls or finish the flooring. There's just, it's a huge category. So anything around you in your environment.
My friend, I don't, you might be a friend of yours as well. Marisol Tejero. I don't know if you know her.
Marisol, no.
No. She, so she's a naturopathic doctor and she's big on castor oil. She's formerly known as the Queen of Thrones, which is all, she's also an expert in branding like you are. Or
she,
I should say,
is she a poop doctor? Queen of Thrones is like a poop, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So awesome. So she talks a lot about poop. I've had her on the podcast before to talk about poop. And when I spoke to her a couple months ago, she wanted to come on the podcast to talk about a new thing that she's into, which I'm going to have this conversation with her soon, but it's about, clothing, synthetic clothing and chemicals on synthetic clothing. And, you know, speaking of, you know, flame retardants and things like that, anti-wrinkle chemicals. I'm wearing a shirt right now that is an anti-wrinkle shirt. Probably
you look
has
lovely,
chemicals
by the
on.
Way. Looks Thank lovely.
You. Thank you. It's nice because honestly, it's a huge convenience because I never have to iron it. And it's really a major thing. But now it's in my head that maybe I've got chemicals on my body in this thing. All these synthetic fibers, basically she's arguing in favor of the idea that all these synthetic fibers are, you know, coated in chemicals and stuff like that. And on the one hand, it kind of, it certainly, like, there's a logic to it that makes sense, that it's plausible. On the other hand, it leads me to, you know, as I start to think about it, I'm like sitting in my car, for example, and I'm sitting on the seat of the car, my skin's in contact, my arms are in contact with the synthetic fibers or the materials of the car, which are certainly also, you know, guilty of the same thing of
300 chemicals in your new car.
Exposure to chemicals, you know, my house, sitting on the couch of my house, you know, there's a million things like that where your skin, you know, I surf, so I wear synthetic bathing suits, wetsuits, things like that. I work out a lot. The clothing for that is oftentimes synthetic fibers, right? So I'm wondering, you know, I spent a bit of time looking on it. There seems to be very little data, very little actual research at all on that topic. And I'm wondering how much of those chemicals of concern are being washed away in the process of washing, you know, putting those clothes in the washing machine, as where they might get washed off as opposed to absorbing in our skin. But do you have any concerns? Have you thought about that issue? Do you have any concerns with synthetic fibers and clothing?
Yes and yes. And I think about it a lot, Ari, which sounds weird because, you know, I have four businesses and four kids and a husband. So like, how do I have any brain space to think about anything? But I really actually do think about this a lot because on the one hand, we all want to look good. And we, on the other hand, we want it to be convenient. And the toxicity of our clothing is almost invisible unless you have an actual reaction to it. So yes, it's really difficult to get clothing that's clean. So this, I think if you're in the world that we live in, like, you know, I present and we're at conferences and I have to look a particular way because that's my brand. So I have a couple of rules. I don't take my clothes to the dry cleaners. They use a form of formaldehyde to clean your clothes. And even when it says clean, it's actually like the BPA, BPS. Mm-hmm. It's just a different form of formaldehyde. So it's still formaldehyde based. Mm-hmm. So I don't take my clothes to the dry cleaner. That's one. We wash it ourselves. And everything that says dry clean only, you can pretty much wash it. So we wash almost everything. Two,
and I assume you don't take personal responsibility for anybody's clothes that may be ruined from following.
Yeah, no. I mean, test it out. But like, you know, most things can be. I had this dress. I bought this dress in med school, and it's like my favorite dress. It's actually a little bit too big now, but it was my favorite dress. And for years, I dry cleaned it, and it looked terrible. And I was like, well, it's either ruined or I'm going to wash the darn thing. And I washed it. It looks great. Now it's too big, but it looks great. It's no longer stained because I was able to actually deep clean it. But, and it says dry clean only. And I was like, all right, well. So from the chemicals in our clothing to the types of chemicals that the clothing is made of, these are tremendous opportunities to, in theory, clean up. But in reality, it's very difficult to find clothing that will match. So back to the rules. One, I don't dry clean my clothes. Two, we use a clean detergent. That's EWG verified. Three, don't wear clothes from the store that haven't been washed, because to prevent them from getting moths on the way from the third world country to you, they're sprayed with chemicals. So do your best to wash them before you wear them.
I was wondering why new clothes have a very distinctive smell to them.
Mm-hmm. It's that chemical that it was sprayed with to prevent the moths from eating it on the way from on the ship. Uh-huh. So wash the clothes before you wear it. And some, I read a study that it can sometimes take multiple washes to get the chemicals out. So wash it, but you may need to wash it again. It's mm-hmm. not always foolproof. So if you still smell it and you go, you know, kind of still smells, throw it back in the wash. And then we haven't talked at all about ways to improve your body's ability to detoxify. So I think if you're going to be someone who's into fashion, then what we focus on are those three rules, and then focus on detoxification, because there's no category of super clean, amazing dyed, comfortable, multi-wear, flexible clothing, unless they're made of synthetic fibers. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, but no.
Right. But do you think that most of these chemicals would be washed off over a period of time in the washing machine over, let's say, a dozen washes?
I don't have the data to comment on that. It is my approach.
I guess what I'm, maybe another way of saying this in a more scientific way would be, are there compounds in there that are likely to be resistant to coming off in a water soap solution that would be likely to come off when in contact with human skin? Like, is there something about the chemical nature of those two things where those chemicals will stay on the fabric in the water soap solution, but come off when in contacting human skin? Like, to me, that seems not super plausible.
Yeah,
because it's either going to be hydrophilic or hydrophobic, uh-huh. and uh-huh. the hydrophobic substances should come out with the surfactants from the soap too, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know the answer to that. I have to take that offline and like look into it, because I honestly don't know.
Okay, got it.
But you're right to think if it's not coming off when you wash it, it shouldn't be coming off on you.
Okay,
that's a valid thought process. But the ones that come off in the wash but come off incompletely are the ones you want to worry about.
Right. Okay. So I have a couple more sort of devil's advocate-y type of questions. And then I want to talk about practical methods to enhance detoxification. So one of them is pretty straightforward, but it's worth speaking to. And then the other one is more sophisticated. So the first one is that there are a number of people who like to call themselves evidence-based. Whether they're evidence-based doctors, evidence-based quote-unquote, or evidence-based nutrition and fitness people who poo-poo the whole notion of anything to do with toxins and detoxification. Detox is a bunch of nonsense. None of it's true. Yes, okay, there's toxins out there, but they're not that big of a deal. And, we have these regulatory bodies, so they're taking charge of, if there really were safety concerns from things like fluoride in the water supply or heavy metals or something, these regulatory bodies would be taking care of it. That's one maybe dimension of the argument. The other one, the majority of the argument is, the only detox that happens that's real is our body's detoxification mechanisms, our excretion mechanisms and liver detoxification methods. And they basically say any other stuff, anybody trying to sell you on anything related to detoxification, that's a bunch of quackery, that's a bunch of pseudoscience. So what do you say in response to people who put forward that argument, who think of themselves as evidence-based?
I remember, I think it was Jeff Bland who said that the minute you have two medicines used together. You're no longer practicing evidence-based medicine because no studies were done on those two medicines.
Right.
And the sheer number of permutations essentially that occur limit our ability to do these studies. But when you go back to 10,000 feet, and by the way, did you see me getting crazy when you were playing devil's advocate?
I was like, I did. Yeah. Just know that it's not me. Don't, I know, you're hurt, just playing don't hurt me. Okay.
You're just the messenger, right?
Yeah, okay. That's right.
So when you go to 10,000 feet, you say, okay, well, certainly we are more sedentary and we have higher stress and we work more, but there is an explosion of chronic disease, autoimmune disease, cancer, and death from all causes that occurring earlier. We're not expected to live as long as our ancestors did. So when you look at what could be the possible causes of that, what do you come up with? Food, lifestyle, and exposures. And the triad, the trifecta of those three things is, I would say, deadly for us. You can't really do a study on that because you can only study, for example, glyphosate. I know I picked on glyphosate a lot in this conversation because it's one of my personal pet peeves, but glyphosate's been studied at levels that are far lower than what people are actually being exposed to. So put it this way, it's been proven perhaps that 5 parts per million is fair, but we're getting exposed at 100 parts per million and the studies aren't being done on those exposures. You're also not looking at what I'll call death by 1,000 cuts. So yeah, sure. Maybe glyphosate in that amount is fine, but you haven't layered on the 30 other exposures you've had before you even left your house in the morning, between your air quality, your water quality, the products you're using, the clothes you're wearing, the bed you slept on, the sheets on the bed, the product you cleaned your house with. I mean, it just goes on and on. So when you talk about evidence-based, there's no ability to do that study because the minute you introduce a second variable, and at what level are you going to introduce, study that variable? Are you going to study at the 5 parts per million? Or are you going to study at the actual exposure? Mm-hmm. But you've introduced permutations that you can't keep track of. There's too many of them. So, and there was a second part to your question that I got so upset about what you said that I lost.
Basically, the idea that anybody saying that you can enhance detoxification from your body, that it's quackery and pseudoscience.
Why would they say that? I mean, you can absolutely enhance your body's ability to. I mean, that's like saying you're never going to improve, mm-hmm. right? So my God-given detox is terrible. I have 2 copies of MTHFR. I have 2 copies for vitamin D deficiency. I have 1 COMT. I have 2 genes for celiac. I have the worst genes. I literally should never have reproduced, but the horse was out of the barn by the time I figured that out. So no, really, I was at, my parents are divorced and I was at my son's bar mitzvah recently and they were at the same table. And I said to them, just for the record, I love the two of you dearly. And you two should never have reproduced. I'm very grateful you did, but you should not have reproduced because it was really a terrible combination what wound up in me.
Have you sat your children down and shared your genetic report and said, look, guys, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, no, I've done all of their genetics actually. And I was like, at least they're better than me, you know?
Yeah.
They have their compound heterozygous for the MTHFR instead of 2 of the C677. Like, it's a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know. So now they'll be depressed with a bad heart instead of just a really bad heart. So they all got the gene for celiac. They're sensitive. I mean, you know, it's just anyway, not to digress, but I have the worst genes ever and innately don't detox well. And by supporting it through proper eating, that's both not eating garbage and eating a lot of things that are helpful, high levels of cruciferous vegetables. I don't take exogenous hormones unless they're bioidentical. I don't drink alcohol personally. I don't drink any. I also don't drink any sugar. So optimizing that and then exercise, stress reduction, sleep, you know, don't discount a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. And then optimizing through things that help your liver like glutathione, vitamin C, binders. There's a lot of ways you can support detox. And we haven't even gotten to sauna, red light therapy, infrared. I mean, there's just so many things that we haven't touched. Hyperbaric oxygen. bringing oxygen deep into the tissues helps the mitochondria detox. So, so I would say essentially to them, check your facts.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, and I mean, there's so much research on specific toxins and the harms from them. And there's so much research on different ways that we can support detoxification, whether it's as simple as sweating or nutrition or supplements or, you know. Absolutely. So here's the more sophisticated argument I've seen. This is on one hand, on one level, it's quite simple. On the other hand, it's quite interesting to think about this. And I know somebody who I consider to be quite high IQ, who I think who has ended up on the wrong side of this argument. The argument is essentially this, that we have research showing that consumption of non-organic produce or whole grains, for example, leads to health benefits, leads to lower rates of diseases compared to people who don't consume as much of those foods. You follow me so far?
So hold on. People who consume higher levels of vegetables and grains, even if not organic, have better health outcomes than people who don't consume vegetables and grains.
Correct. It's not comparing non-organic to organic consumption of those foods. It's comparing more consumption of those foods to less consumption of those foods that are non-organic.
I'm with you so far.
Okay. So more consumption of those foods leads to improved health, lower rates of various diseases. So the argument is essentially that these pesticides and pesticide residues and things like that that are on our food are not of significance, if that's the case. Do you understand the argument? So how can we make sense of the fact that consuming more of those foods leads to lower rates of diseases, has health benefits, and simultaneously pair that with the notion that these foods have pesticide residues that are harming our health?
My sense is that the bar is set pretty low on this, Ari, right? Like, are we talking about standard American diet versus not highly processed and simply more vegetables and grains, whole grains? So it's such a low bar that you're going to note improvement. What you really can't drill, because this is a short-term study too, right? This is a 6-week study or a 3-month study. We're not talking about trends over 20 years where you really do get to see the incidence of insulin resistance, diabetes, obesity, cancer rates. You just don't have the impact of time to be able to see the runway of
I think it's mostly observational research, actually, long-term observational research looking at like disease outcomes.
But they've never compared non-organic to organic with the same levels.
We have an explosion
of chronic disease. So at some level, the food we're eating plays a role in that.
Right. My response to it was, I asked him to think of a thought experiment where you had people in, let's say, an area in Africa that was suffering from malnutrition from protein deficiency. So let's say they had like almost no food available. They were surviving on like starchy tubers like cassava and nothing else. And for months or for years, they will develop malnutrition as a result of lack of protein. And let's say you airdropped in a bunch of chicken every week, but the chicken was contaminated with arsenic. You would expect to see that the protein consumption resolves a lot of the symptoms of the malnutrition, but over time, the arsenic poisoning would result in other symptoms. So you have this like complex mixture of beneficial effects and toxic effects at the same time. You get what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So I think with like, okay, you can eat, if you eat more broccoli, you're getting some benefits from the broccoli, but you're also getting pesticide residues that would it be better to not have those pesticide residues? Yeah. Is it possible that the consumption of those pesticide residues are, over time is likely to lead to other health problems, even if overall the net benefit of it is still there's still a net benefit relative to the net harm, possibly, you know.
No, it becomes totally
it, yeah, it becomes, I think, complex when you look at it in the context of vegetable consumption or something like that.
Yeah, so let's talk about that in real life, right? So what I always say to people is, yeah, it's better to eat your vegetables than to eat something that came from a processing plant. Mm-hmm. You're always going to lean, tip the scales towards health the better you do. Do you have to be perfect? No, but you have to be better. Mm-hmm. So when you're faced with a choice of something processed versus something whole, eat the whole, whether or not it has chemicals. If you're faced with the option of something whole, organic, something whole, not organic, hit the organic, because you're not adding another layer of complexity to the soup. Mm-hmm. Don't complicate the soup, right? Give your body what it needs. Don't fill the pump with toxins that you then need to deal with, because you want to have a drink, right? You want to have your broccoli with your alcohol. But really, you want to have your glass of wine with dinner, with your steamed broccoli, mm-hmm. and your protein and whatever your carb is. So don't fill the pump, because you want to fill the pump in other ways.
Yeah.
So it's all about give and take.
Okay, I have two last questions for you. One is, what are maybe one or two sources of toxins that are, I don't want to say secret, but are there like hidden sources of toxins that most people are unaware of?
Ooh, that we haven't already talked about? I think your bed is a hidden toxin.
Okay.
And this is not something that anyone's going to, this is alongside the alcohol. Your pets are hidden toxins because they have dander. And if they sleep in bed with you, you're inhaling it. I mean, because toxins are not just environmental. Or not just from things the environment gives us. Our animals could be toxic. And I actually would go for that our thoughts are a huge hidden source of toxins, because mm-hmm. they will shut down detox faster than I could click my fingers. Mm-hmm.
Except in the case of me running from the lion while being still excellent.
Of course, of yes. course.
Okay. Yes. Just want to make sure we add that
yes.
exception to the general rule. The last question is practical strategies for detox.
Okay.
So what are maybe like your top three biggies that people need to focus on?
Okay. Just for the record, I am commitment phobic. So three is like far too little for me to even get my head around. Like, can't you just
tell me, just you tell me, you throw a number okay. out there.
We'll Let's go put with it in categories. Maybe we'll do three categories. So there's the category of, okay. Oh man. Maybe it's five categories. Okay. I can't commit, Ari. So the first category would be do the basics. What are the basics? Move your body so you sweat. Get enough rest every night so you can clean your brain and detox your body. Eat food that looks like itself. Try to eat organic food whenever possible. Minimize your alcohol because it shuts the system down. Those are like the platform behaviors. And then if you're someone who is into supplementation as a cat, like I'm into supplements, I love taking them. I take lots of them. So if you're into supplements, take supplements that help you bind or remove toxins like glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid. You can take fiber, get high levels of fiber. The propylmanin conjugate fiber binds to every strain of mycotoxins. So if you live in a climate or have had water damage or have a moldy basement or you live in a wet climate, you can actually remove the toxins just by getting fiber.
Which one was that called? Propyl?
Propylmanin. It's the conjugate fiber.
I thought it was glucomannan.
No, propylmanin. Well, it may be also glucomannan, but propylmanin conjugate fiber will remove. It's like off screen, but it's right there.
Propomanin?
Propol. P-R-O-P-O-L-M-A-N-N-A-N. There might be an extra L in there somewhere.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I have not
heard
that.
It's the conjugate fiber, and it binds to all the strains of mycotoxins. So if you're into that kind of thing, that's an easy win because it helps regulate your gut and helps bind things. Easy mm-hmm. wins. Cilantro, which I personally despise, okay? I'm not walking the talk on this one. I hate cilantro. But if you like cilantro, eat it because it binds to mercury and other
You're
toxins.
One of the people that genetically it tastes like soap to you.
Remember, we talked about genetics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But parsley also very effective. So eat foods that support detox. Microgreens.
What about modified citrus pectin and fulvic acid and zeolites?
All of them. Love it. Okay. Great binders. So all those binders are fantastic for moving the mycotoxins and the metals. Mm-hmm. So those are great. And then I guess we are in three categories. So there's the lifestyle and food, then there's the supplementation, and then there's the other, which is get yourself to a sauna, get yourself to a float tank, get yourself to a hyperbaric oxygen, get yourself an IV, get yourself the ways to support detox and push it along. So those are the red light therapy. Those are those alternative things that your friends don't like.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Wendy, this was so much fun. Thank you for coming on the show. I love your energy. I always love our conversations. It was such a pleasure to have you on, and I'm sure this will be the first of many conversations.
This is so great. Thank you.
Or the first, at least on my channel. We've already had many conversations outside of this. Where can people go to find your work or to get in touch with you, to work with you? Where do you want to send people?
I'm everywhere. So the book,
like God, omnipresent.
I'm everywhere. So do not go to your favorite search engine and type in dirty girl, because you're not going to find me. I promise you.
What will they find?
You'll find other stuff. And if that's what you're looking for, you should enjoy that, but you're not going to find the book. So the best way to find the book is to go on Amazon and type in dirty girl detox or dirty girl Trubo, and I'll show up. It's a bright yellow cover. It's right behind me. So that'll show up. And our website is fivejourneys.com. And we, gosh, honestly, I'm totally blanking. We have a free chapter one of the book, if people really want to like see what it's about before buying it. And that the best place to find that is on the Dirty Girl website, which is Dirty Girl Detox. Just to be clear, don't type in Dirty Girl. You won't get to me. So type in dirtygirldetox.com. And on there is the first free chapter of the book. So you can start to read it. And, you know, I'm all about ways that you can be empowered. So that, and then we have our own podcast, which is the Five Journeys podcast, Live Like You Matter. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Instagram as Wendy Trubo MD and Facebook. I'm everywhere. I told you, it's like all over the place.
Yeah. Awesome. Wendy, thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to next time.
Thanks, Ari.
Hey there, this is Ari again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, if you found it valuable, please share it with your friends, share it with your family, help me get the word out there. Also, if you're on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button and hit that little bell to get notifications every time we release a new video or new episode of the podcast. And if you're listening to this, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Thanks so much for supporting my work at the Energy Blueprint. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will see you in the next.